Good morning. Are we good? All right, great. So today I'm going to start talking a little bit about unsupervised speaker adaptation with respect to use of total variability and cosine scoring like Najim just previously discussed. But first off, I've only known Najim for a couple of months, and I think a lot of you probably know a lot more about him than I do, but I just wanted to summarize maybe a couple of things I've learned. And these are in quotes that he's had over the last couple of weeks. Now, I had to get a little bit of peer approval with this because I wasn't sure if this introduction slide was going to be appropriate at all. But, well, it seemed okay, so we're going to go with it anyway. So this is what happened during this SRE 2010. This is his main quote. Now, upon arrival in Brno, he goes ahead. But see, like, his mind changes really quickly because, I mean, I just put this together about a couple hours ago because, like, this morning he was really up for this city. He was a good big fan. You know? And it works out. And so I decided to, you know, predict what's going to happen in a few days. And, like, and this is kind of what I'm hoping for. As you may know, he doesn't drink that much beer or anything. But I'm thinking that maybe he opts for Coke for some reason. But maybe we should help him out with beer and helping him give that a go. But anyway, down to business. So the whole idea behind my talk is on, again, unsupervised adaptation. And the whole motivation behind it is that capturing and characterizing every source of variability is pretty difficult, especially with only one enrollment session. Now, if we were able to have multiple enrollments of the same speaker, this would help average out more sources of the inconsistencies and provide a better representation of our speaker model. And so this brings us to the problem of speaker adaptation in general. But in the problem of unsupervised speaker adaptation, we are updating our speaker models without a priori knowledge that the utterance that we're updating our model with actually belongs to the target speaker. Now, and we do so based on utterance processed during testing, and this was incorporated in the SRE 2004 or 2005 or so. Now, in previous work using joint factor analysis before we began on this work with total variability, what we noticed was that there were indeed highly variable scores that were produced by JFA, and they required normalization, in particular ZT norm. And applying these score normalizations in the unsupervised adaptation domain requires a significant amount of additional computation with each adaptation update. I'll go a little bit more into that in just a little bit. Now, when we began this attempt with total variability, we were hoping for a certain number of improvements where we could do unsupervised speaker adaptation with less computation, and we take advantage of total variability's use of low-dimensional total factor vectors, or I-vectors. We can debate on who wants to name what later, and then there's the cosine similarity scoring, which is very quick. And also, there's also a set of new score normalization strategies that we wanted to play with, namely the symmetric normalization, S-norm, and the normalized cosine distance that Najim just talked about. So a little bit of a sort of a outline for this talk. I'm going to go over just really quickly whatever total variability was. Najim just already did a very good job explaining some of the ideas behind it. I'll go into the unsupervised adaptation algorithm that we came up with that's gotten decent success in results, and then we can proceed onward with score normalization experiments and a little bit of further discussion. So total variability, et cetera, has all the components that was shown in the previous talk and that we've probably all seen in the past. We're using factor analysis as a feature extractor. You have a speaker and channel-dependent supervector. there's intersession compensation with LDA and WCCN, and cosine scoring. Just in the final, at the end of the day, we're just going to use W prime, which is after everything has been applied, and such that cosine scoring is actually really just the inner product between the two vectors. So for previous work in joint factor analysis, on the topic of unsupervised adaptation was done by Yin Rose and Kenny. And what they did was, given some new adaptation data, they would compute the posterior distribution of that speaker-dependent hyperparameters using the current hyperparameters as the prior. And what they also did was to set a fixed and predefined adaptation threshold and use log likelihood ratio scoring. In that paper, they also introduced an adaptive T-norm score normalization technique, because what they had observed was there's a drift of T-normalized scores as more adaptation data was used. And in order to be able to use a fixed decision threshold in their decision process, they had to do a new type of normalization. Now, that method was met with a good amount of success, and they were very promising. Yet, in order to implement the adaptive T normalization, it required a good bit of computation, and calculating posterior distributions aren't easy, and also there was a required recomputation of z-norm parameters after every adaptation update. And then lastly, I guess the success also depended on the choice of your adaptation threshold, which was tuned, but we'll also get to that in a little bit. Now, for us then, in order to better or try to improve upon this work in the context of total variability, what we wanted was to satisfy the following criteria. We wanted a simple and robust method for setting an adaptation threshold theta, and what we decided was to set it to be the same as some optimal decision threshold, some development data set. The one we were going to use was the NIST 2006 SRE data, and basically what we would do is carry out your test without adaptation, carry out a run without adaptation, and set the optimal, I guess, the point that will minimize the DCF at that threshold, and we'd set that as our threshold to test. And I'll get into details about that in a little bit. Now, next was we wanted to minimize the amount of computation that was necessary during each unsupervised adaptation update. And this helps that already from total variability, we are able to use low-dimensional total factor vectors, and that we are able to use cosine similarity scoring. And lastly, our hope was to simplify our score normalization procedures wherever possible. So really, basically, I mean, if we were able to use our total factor vectors or I vectors as point estimates in our speaker space, then given limited training data, we might not obviously have a perfect estimation of where our speaker really lies. And so suppose this is just a cartoon, so it's not anything rigorous at all. But suppose we had our true speaker identity S, which can be given by the little circle there. But then, and our estimated enrollment utterance or speaker identity of W sub I. And so this isn't exact very right on the spot of where the true speaker identity is. But if we had a good number of these utterances, it would make sense that we should converge towards a better representation of the speaker. Now, of course, this cartoon is also assuming a priori that the additional data that we actually have is from speaker S. Now, so as such, we decided to propose this algorithm here, and in an effort to match the technical rigor of the previous two presentations before me, I decided to pack as much math as I could in this one slide. But basically, we're saying that we have a set of total factor vectors that are assumed to pertain to an identity of a known speaker S. And then we have a set of total factor vectors, T sub I, that are extracted from the test utterance for each of our K tests. And with a defined decision threshold theta, we have this a new equation for the score, which since this is this notation is just the cardinality set S, this is just the mean of all the scores. And then we compare that to some threshold, and if the threshold of all these, that threshold of the score exceeds your threshold, then you decide that the utterance, current utterance T sub I would belong inside your, into the identity of your speaker S, and you would, A, you would say yes to that trial, and B, you would admit that new utterance T sub I into your speaker big W sub S. Now, what we have is a symmetry that allows for a fixed threshold, and later we will have more discussion on the ideas for the design of this function, because it can conceivably be made much better. But to reiterate what I just said, it's actually quite easy. So if you had an initial enrollment utterance, estimated speaker identity, W sub 1, and you have an incoming test utterance T sub I, this is assuming that these are all of your speaker identities right here. This is all you have, just a single utterance. And you compute a score, then if your single score S1 is greater than theta, then you just take that test utterance and you can place it in with this. And this becomes, what you have is now a new test utterance, a new training utterance that was just your test utterance. And so, that's how you simply admit more training vectors into your set. And so now, if you had a second test utterance, then you compute two scores, right? You have your initially estimated speaker identity and this new training utterance W sub T1, and you compute these two scores. And now, if you if that function of those two scores is again greater than your fixed threshold theta, then you do the same thing and you put another new training utterance in. So that's all it is. And so the emphasis behind this approach, again, is such that we do not need to change decision thresholds theta. Previously, the idea, like in the past in related work, was that with more adapted utterances and all that, in the text-dependent setting, what some work was doing in the past was such that you would increase the decision threshold with each adaptation utterance. But for us, we want to keep things as simple as possible, and so we decided that we did not want to change any decision threshold theta, and also there's simply, right now, there's no modification of your total factor vectors. Simply, all we're doing is actually combining scores. And now, so that summarizes the total variability and unsupervised adaptation. So I'm going to go really quickly into score normalization, which I'm aware it's a very well-known topic. And so I'm only going to give it a brief review with a couple of emphases in the wording. But so for the idea behind score normalization is that we are assuming that distribution of target speaker and imposter scores follow two distinct normal distributions. And however, the parameters for these two distributions are speaker independent, target speaker dependent. As such, we need to normalize to allow for a universal decision threshold. And so in zero normalization, or z-norm as is well known, we scale and shift the distribution of scores produced by a target speaker model and a set of imposter utterances to the standard normal distribution. Now, in test normalization t-norm, it's like the same thing, except in order to address for the idea of intercession variability, we scale and shift the distribution of scores produced by a test utterance and a set of imposter models to the standard normal distribution. Now, the idea here is to keep in mind the italicized words utterance and model, and I'll discuss how they're related in the context of total variability in just a little bit. In ZT norm, we've already seen that it achieves the best results in a factor analysis-based system, and that's what's currently being used in the state of the art. So now, what we have here what we have in ZT norm parameter updates during this model adaptation is the lack of a need, for more normalization parameters, right? Because if these become training utterances, W sub T1 and W sub T2, then they were previously test utterances, so they already had a T-norm associated with them. But what we need additionally is obviously a Z-norm to be computed. But that's actually it. So that means we can simply pre-compute our Z-norm parameters for each test utterance as we do it at the same way we do it for each target speaker utterance, target speaker model as well. And so that's all we need to do. In the past, we had to compute these adaptive T-norm parameters. We had to recompute Z-norm parameters after each adaptation update. However, here it's very simple and it should be much quicker. Now, the next thing was that total variability in the context of the difference between utterances and models. Well, total variability uses factor analysis as a front end. And so what we have is that the extraction of total factors from an enrollment or test utterance follows really the exact same process. As such, there's really no difference between an utterance and a model. And if there's no, and also with the cosine similarity and the symmetry behind all that, there is no distinction to be made. As such, we can think of them all as the same thing, which brings us to an even more simplified method of score normalization, which is the S norm, which is the thing that Patrick Kenny had. And so, really, all we do in implementing the S norm here is to define a new set of imposters, which is simply the union of the Z norm imposters and the T norm imposters, and what we get is a new scoring function that looks pretty similar to any other normalization function that we have, except we just simply add the two normalized scores, and this becomes our S norm, where the first term there refers to mu sub ws, which is the S norm parameters associated with your model on ws, and then you have your score or you have your mu sub ti, which becomes simply the S-norm mean of your the test utterance itself. So what this gives us now is a universal procedure for calculating normalization parameters and a correspondingly simple method for score normalization. And then the last step of normalization that I explored here was previously discussed in Najim's discussion, but that's sort of what it looks like, just as a quick reminder. So what we have now are some experiments that were run. And the system that I used here was really the same system that that Najim previously had, given that we were working together. So you have your standard parameters for the system setup, and then the table of the corpora that we used, which you can take a more detailed look at it at some other time if you would like. But the idea with the protocol of our experiments was we went in to test. Our results are based on the female part of the 2008 NIST SRE data set, and we fixed our decision and adaptation threshold data as the optimal min-DCF a posteriori decision threshold from the development data of NIST 2006. And so these are like the 10-second condition results. Well, we cared mostly about the 10-second results here, and these are the results that we see. We can see that in terms of the minimizing detection cost function, the adaptation-based CT norm achieves the best min DCF, whereas the normalized cosine that Najim previously discussed did also very well. For everything else, the English trials for equal error rates, and also the min DCF for all trials. But at the same time, we can also notice that S norm also achieves good results, very competitive, and in some cases even better than the ZT norm. At least for English equal error rate or so. So in order to validate our results, we also tried our work in the longer utterances, and in this case, Najim's normalization system actually swept our results across the board in achieving the best results here. And at the same time, there are a couple things to take note. What we can see here is that what our proposed adaptation algorithm is successful in improving performance results regardless of the normalization procedure. This is obviously consistent with the notion that unsupervised adaptation with, of course, an appropriately chosen threshold should be at least as good as, though hopefully better than, the baseline method without adaptation. And the next thing is that we have our simplified S-norm approach performs competitively with the more complicated traditional ZT-norm approach. And of course, what we have seen is that the best result is ultimately obtained using cosine normalization. As a result, I think one of the cooler things is that we seem to have come full circle with the study and the story of score normalization techniques, in that in the beginning, we needed normalization techniques in order to better sort of calibrate our scores for a fixed decision threshold. And then, however, as we got to like the most complicated ZT norm, we actually started going backwards and started simplifying things into an S norm, which is much easier to calculate. And then now it's almost a the parameters that we need are not speaker dependent at all. There is no need in the normalized cosine distance to actually have each speaker parameter the parameters of each distribution calculated for each speaker. It's a pretty universal set of parameters that Najim discussed. There's a bit of work that I brought up earlier that where we decided that, oh, look, maybe there's a better way to improve our score combination function. And this is some basic ideas that I wanted to go over that we're currently working, but we don't have any significant improvement in our results just yet, in terms of our results. However, the idea is weighted averaging because our currently proposed method for combining scores really treats every vector in the set of speaker total factors as equally important. However, at the end of the day, the only vector that unequivocally belongs to the speaker S is the initial enrollment vector. As such, maybe it makes more sense to weight that vector as a little bit higher than what we have than the rest of the training utterances that we admit, and because the presence of false alarm adaptation updates in which a test utterance is incorrectly admitted will have an adverse effect on all subsequent tests. As such, maybe our score combining function should take the following into account, where we weight each score by a coefficient A, where this coefficient A is the unnormalized score, something like the cosine similarity that ranges between negative 1 and 1. And so it can be seen as a weight to each score. And then that's sort of what we can look at. And a quick visualization, I know I'm running out of time right now, is that we can simply take a look at it this way, where if your initial identity speaker vector is W sub 1 is most important, but the next few vectors might be erroneous because based on, say, your threshold, you're only allowing the region in the green circle in. And so if your true speaker identity is S, then you may incorrectly allow some vectors in. As you get more and more vectors in, we can be more and more certain that they belong into the speaker's identity. And so what we would have is like you add a training vector and you shift that space a little bit and then maybe you add in an incorrect one. But then you add a more correct one, and as a result, after a couple more of these utterances, you can see finally that maybe you'll get the right one. However, you did that false alarm one. Maybe you should take it out or something like that. And so that's sort of like what we're looking at working on in the future, and we're still looking to improve the score combination function. Welcome to any ideas. And one of the ideas also is that though it's not allowed in the NIST protocol, but since we're most error-prone in the beginning, after a while, maybe we can go take another look at the training vectors and correct any errors from the beginning. And this is easy to do because we don't actually modify our vectors at all. And so what we have, the final summary, is that we have proposed a method for unsupervised speaker adaptation in the use of total variability and cosine scoring. We have simple and efficient method for score combination and a fixed a priori decision threshold before testing. And this method here can also easily accommodate all score normalization procedures. And with respect to score normalization, we've discussed some of the more, the newer non-ZT norm ideas, which are like S-norm and the normalized cosine that, that Najim had talked about earlier. So, thanks.
Are there questions for Stephen?
In different papers, the last one was proposed by Mitchell in 2008. We look at this problem and trying to show that if you are using a fixed threshold, you are quite never updating your speaker model. If you are thinking about the new cost function proposed by NIST this year, you have quite no chance to have, if you don't have a good model at the beginning, to have a test trial winning the threshold, over than the threshold. And we proposed in these papers a weighted adaptation, like you are doing for the scores, a continuous adaptation, just try to evaluate the confidence of a trial. Uh-huh. And in all the cases, weight this trial with the confidence and use it for the training, for increasing the training. Did you try something like that?
So the question is whether or not I tried using...
The question could be first, do you really think that using a fixed threshold to decide if you are using or not the trial data to improve your speaker model is a good solution in practice, could be really useful.
If I'm hearing the question correctly, I think so. Yeah, the use of a fixed decision threshold, I believe would have at the end of the day, I think it makes things simple, as opposed like and then or using a fixed decision threshold. But at the same time, using a varying score combination function that will weight the scores of each training utterance that we have, I think that's like a pretty good way to do it. But I guess maybe we could talk more about it later. Yeah,
I could just precise the second part of the question.
Yeah.
When you compute your try to imagine you compute your weighted score in all the cases with all the trials.
Okay.
And just apply your adaptation threshold on this score. Do you think it could improve the performance or not?
I'm computing a score with every single trial? Sorry, I'm not. Okay.
Jean-François, I also have an answer. Let me just walk down the steps. I also have an answer to your question about the prior. I have a rather extended comment on this in my presentation tomorrow. So let's do that then. Maybe a last question to Stephen? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.